This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
China says it will take necessary measures to safeguard its legitimate rights and interests, just after the U.S. added 23 Chinese entities to an economic blacklist. Iran slams what it calls shameful Western hypocrisy, just after some American and European politicians attended an annual meeting of the MKO terrorist group. Western U.S. is bracing for more scorching heat wave after dangerously hot conditions killed scores of people in June. This is World News with me, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Beijing lashes out at the United States for blacklisting several more Chinese entities over alleged human rights abuses. The Chinese Minister of Commerce said that Washington's addition of 23 Chinese entities to an economic blacklist amounts to serious breach of international economic and trade rules. The ministry added the U.S. move is an unreasonable suppression of Chinese companies. It is stressed that Beijing will take necessary measures to safeguard its legitimate rights and interests. Now, this is amid an ongoing trade war between the two countries, which have been at loggerheads over several issues, including tariffs on imports. Well, I talked to political commentator Andrew Leung, and he believes that a U.S. anti-China policies show it is trying to turn itself into a global hegemonic power.
There is a great power, a rivalry. Not only in trade, but in technology, on the ideology, on the military in the South China Sea, and on human rights, including Taiwan, Xinjiang, Hong Kong, and on values, democracy against so-called authoritarianism. So it's a great power rivalry across the board, 360 degrees. Now, this latest episode reflects in the eyes of Beijing, and continuing inability for the United States to think outside the box, in the sense that somehow the United States still clings to its perception of world hegemony, as if it can call the shots on all matters and over all countries. But this the times have changed, in the sense that the American hegemony is in decline. Not that American power is in decline or its economy is in decline, but its hegemony is in decline, in the sense that it can no longer call the shots on everything. And it has got to share power with a rising China. Sooner rather than later, the Chinese economy is going to exceed the United States as the largest economy in the world.
Tehran slamming Western countries for backing and participating in an annual meeting of the MKO terrorist group. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman said that MKO is a terrorist cult that has the blood of Iranian people on its hands. Said Khatibzadeh slammed Western politicians, including former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, for selling themselves to the Europe-hosted circus. He accused the West of shameful hypocrisy driven by insatiable thirst for money and anti-Iran obsession. The MKO's 3-day virtual meeting, which began in Paris on Saturday, is attended by Pompeo and several American lawmakers, as well as Slovenian Prime Minister. Every year, the event brings together delegates paid by the terror group. The MKO has performed assassination and bombing campaigns against the Iranians since the country's Islamic Revolution in 1979.
The Mujahideen Khalq organization was founded in the 1960s. The group started the blind assassination campaign of Iranian citizens and officials after the 1979 Islamic Revolution in a bid to overturn the Islamic establishment and control the country. They also conducted dozens of bombings across Iran. Out of nearly 17,000 Iranians killed in different terrorist attacks over the past four decades, about 12,000 of them have fallen victim to the group's acts of terror. Former Iranian President Mohammad Ali Rajai and ex-Prime Minister Mohammad Javad Bahonar are among those killed in the MKO terror attacks. The group is also responsible for a massive blast targeting the headquarters of the Islamic Republic Party on June 28, 1981 in Tehran. At least 72 senior Iranian officials and lawmakers, including then Judiciary Chief Ayatollah Mohammad Ali Beheshti, lost their lives in the bombing. The MKO is also behind the failed assassination attempt on the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in 1981. During a war launched against Iran by former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s, MKO members were armed by then the Iraqi regime and prepared them to fight alongside Baathist forces against the Islamic Republic. Despite all crimes committed by the MKO, it is not currently listed by any Western country as a terrorist organization. The European Union and the US, that often claim to be against any form of terrorism, rather removed the MKO from their lists of terror organizations in 2009 and 2012 respectively. Ever since, the West has changed its stance toward the MKO, propagating it not only as an Iranian opposition group, but misses no chance to fund the group and lobby in its favor. The MKO throws lavish conferences every year in the French capital Paris, with well-known American, Western, and Saudi figures in attendance as guests of honor. Some of these figures who attend these events include former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, former Mayor of New York City Rudy Giuliani, former Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, and former Saudi spy chief Prince Turki bin Faisal Al Saud. The MKO is currently based in Albania, where it enjoys freedom of activities despite being involved in taking thousands of innocent Iranian lives and plotting terrorist attacks for decades.
International lawyer Barry Grossman says that Washington's support for the anti-Iran MKO terrorist group indicates the extent that it is trying to push its political agenda against the Islamic Republic.
It's all quite clearly evidence of the lengths that the United States will go to in order to push their illegitimate political agendas in foreign nations. Let's not forget that this organization was listed by the U.S. State Department as a terrorist organization until quite recently. And then suddenly, as a result of lobbying and as a result of, I presume, some assessment by the security apparatus that they could prove useful, that designation was removed. And since that time, the U.S. has been actively involved in providing support and backing them. In fact, there have been a number of instances in the U.S. where people have been almost arbitrarily arrested just for trying to keep an eye on the headquarters in California and other places where they're operating. And of course, we all know that this organization now operates very openly and with full support from the Atlantic World apparatus in Europe and Romania.
Recent visits by the Taliban delegation to Tehran and Moscow come as the militants are intensifying attacks, mainly in district centers and border lines across northern and western Afghanistan. This has sparked mixed reactions.
Nowadays, the Taliban are gaining more ground in Afghanistan by increasing their attacks, especially on district centers and border areas, mainly in the northern and western parts of the country. The Taliban captured some key border areas in northern and western provinces of Badakhshan, Kunduz, Faryab, and Herat over the last week. These gains have at least added to Kremlin's concerns. Moscow voiced concern over the possibility of Taliban militants spilling across the border into Tajikistan. That came after hundreds of Afghan troops fled to Tajikistan due to the Taliban's advances in northeastern Badakhshan province earlier this week. The militants also captured the Islam Qala customs checkpoint located near the Iranian border in western Herat province. The Taliban have stepped up their attacks across Afghanistan at a time when the group's political wing has, ironically enough, become active as well. Two Taliban delegations traveled to Tehran and Moscow earlier this week as a show of the group's will to find a political solution to the Afghan conflict. This comes as war-weary Afghans widely welcome any move to bring stability to their country by any player, mainly the Taliban. However, some have believed that there are some secret deals that lead Afghan troops to surrender to the Taliban and hand over areas to them. But the Afghan president strongly rejects the allegation.
There is no any secret deal. We are not willing to surrender to the Taliban at any cost. The time has come to bravely defend our land and dignity. The Taliban cannot force us to surrender even in 100 years' time.
In the meantime, a spokesman for the Taliban has also said that they will offer a written peace proposal to the Afghan government within a month. However, many also doubt about the real intentions of the Taliban. They, for instance, argue that the Taliban's diplomatic efforts are simply political maneuvering to restore their image among the public, who have not forgotten how difficult life was under the Taliban rule over Afghanistan before 2001.
The Taliban are struggling to win the hearts and minds of people by attempts such as focusing on political moves like traveling to Iran and Russia. But we cannot approve their rule over Afghanistan unless they honor our values and major achievements, mainly human rights and press freedom.
Taliban militants have scaled up their attacks all over Afghanistan since May. But the emergence of popular forces mainly in northern Afghanistan turned things against the Taliban's will. That is why some experts have believed the recent political moves by the Taliban are due to the pressure coming from public resistance forces against the group, forces who have in some cases liberated dozens of districts from Taliban control. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Welcome back. Moving on, the western United States is bracing for more scorching heat wave after the country recorded June as the hottest month in 127 years. Of record keeping. The National Weather Service has predicted dangerously hot conditions, including temperatures of up to 54 degrees Celsius in Death Valley, California. The existing record of high temperatures likely to be rivaled or broken. It also warned of the elevated risk of heat-related illnesses. The hottest month of June, which coincided with a record-setting drought, killed scores of people, strained electric grids, and depleted reservoirs. The extended heat wave has already killed at least 116 people in Oregon alone. Based on an opinion poll, the majority of Brazilians back impeaching President Jair Bolsonaro. According to a survey conducted by Datafolha, 54% of people support a proposed move by the lower house to open impeachment proceedings, while 42% oppose it. People have been holding protests across Brazil for months, slamming the president's handling of the coronavirus pandemic. Last week, a Supreme Court judge authorized an investigation into Bolsonaro for dereliction of duty over procuring an Indian COVID vaccine. Suspicions of overpricing and corruption related to the contract have been cited for the allegation. Brazil has the world's second highest COVID death toll, with nearly 533,000. Saturday, it registered more than 48,000 new daily cases and 1,200 deaths. Political commentator Bruno Biclini says that Brazilians realize the fact that President Jair Bolsonaro is not a reliable politician.
Well, we can affirm that Jair Bolsonaro's basis and support and legitimacy is disintegrating. The poll does not reveal the worst part of the scenario in Brazil, is that we have 6,175 professional military people, military officers, inside the civilian government. And what are they doing? They are supporting Bolsonaro escalation to threaten democratic institutions. For example, this week, the defense minister and the whole commanders-in-chief of the army, the navy, and the air force. And the day after this, the commander of the Air Force, they threatened the Congress and they threatened democracy in Brazil. They are not saying we are going to do a coup d'etat, but they are threatening because they do have some colonels, some lieutenant and colonels inside the health ministry, very, very committed, I would say, for suspicious about the Indian vaccine and other, I would say, mystery negotiations. So we do have a polarized society, but the right wing and the right wingers in Brazil, they are split. They are not even maybe a half of them is still support Bolsonaro, and 55, 57, 61% does not rely on Bolsonaro. He's not a reliable man, a reliable person in Brazil.
The coronavirus pandemic continues to take its toll on India as the number of infections keeps rising in the world's second most populous nation. It reported well over 42,000 new cases on Sunday, pushing the caseload to 31 million. There were also some 900 new deaths, and that pushed the fatalities to 409,000. India has the world's second highest number of cases and the third largest number of deaths. Experts blame the growing number of infections on the Delta variant. That's a more dangerous and contagious breed of the virus. They say restrictions should be put in place to stem the rise in the number of deaths and infections. The Bulgarians go to the polls in the second parliamentary vote in just 3 months after an April election resulted in a fragmented parliament. The vote pits the Conservative Party, a long-serving premier, Boko Borisov, against the anti-establishment party of TV host Slavi Trifonov. They tied at around 20% in the last poll. Both would need support of other traditional parliamentary parties to form a government if they win. Bulgaria is run by an interim government, and that after the April vote failed to produce a government, the former government of Borisov lost public appeal last year amid mass rallies against what demonstrators called entrenched corruption in the establishment. In Moldova, people are also voting in a snap parliamentary election after President Maia Sandu dissolved parliament in April. 101 parliamentary seats are up for grabs in the vote. Early results are expected hours after the polls close at 1800 GMT. Sandu's pro-Western allies hope to take over the chamber after they secure the presidency in 2020. They face a coalition of supporters of former President Igor Dodon, which held a majority of 54 seats in parliament before its dissolution in April. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the Palestinians to keep protesting Israel's racist plans, including the land grab policy. Hamas says that the resistance and protests would help foil Israel's expansionist plots. Now that after Israeli forces attacked Palestinians protesting an Israeli settlement outpost near the occupied West Bank town of Beita. The Palestinian Red Crescent said that the scores of protesters were injured. The settlement has become a focal point of clashes between settlers, backed by regime forces, and the Palestinians. Several Palestinians have been killed and dozens more wounded over the past weeks. The Israeli authorities have decided to turn the settlement into a military base. Residents want the settlement to be removed. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Welcome back. We met Javad Qarai, an enthusiastic young nature explorer, and followed him as he discovered some of Iran's most unspoiled natural attractions in the southern province of Sistan and Balochistan. We visited the exotic Martian mountains with their peculiar shapes and ventured deep into the intertwining and spiral cave of the region. And finally, we joined Javad as he gazed into the mesmerizing waters of the Sea of Oman above the rocky cliffs. Stay with us as we further explore the wonders of the region and meet the kind-hearted locals.
The area is so beautiful and unspoiled. It is home to large flocks of birds, such as the cormorant sitting on the sandy beaches offering a scenic spectacle. It is the perfect place for bird watchers to come and feast their eyes on these exotic animals. Bird watching is a branch of tourism, or to be exact, ecotourism. Bird watchers are steadily growing in number. Cormorants are aquatic birds. They are medium to large in size, with a body weight in the range of 0.35 to 5 kilograms and a wingspan of 45 to 100 centimeters. The majority of the species have dark feathers. They are excellent divers, and underwater, they propel themselves with their feet with help from their wings. Some cormorant species have been found to dive as deep as 45 meters. Cormorants nest in colonies around the shore, on trees, islets, or cliffs. They are coastal rather than oceanic birds, and some have colonized inland waters. Indeed, the original ancestor of cormorants seems to have been a freshwater bird. In my previous trips here, I saw large flocks of these beautiful birds here in this season, but this time there aren't so many of them. One of the reasons behind the decline in their populations is because some of the locals hunt and eat them. Although cormorants are not supposed to be eaten because they are carnivorous. According to some religious scholars, flesh-eating birds are not to be eaten. The flesh of carnivorous birds may contain many diseases that can be passed on to humans if eaten, but the locals are not aware of that. Those who hunt the cormorants do not do so because there is nothing else to eat, so they have no reason to kill and consume so many of these poor birds and do irreparable damage to the wildlife and environment in the region. The environment and wildlife are manifestations of God's beauty. How can humans, who consider themselves the greatest of creations, allow themselves to harm the manifestations of God's beauty? Human survival on the planet Earth inevitably depends on the environment and on the wildlife. Therefore, our country's officials should educate the local populations and make sure that the environment in each and every part of the country is well taken care of. This has been a very beautiful day for me. Berries is one of the most beautiful places I have visited, and I have visited many over the years. A day later, I'm on my way to a beautiful village in the heart of nature, accompanied by my good friend, Sheer Muhammad Rahul. To get to Shame-Kohne, that's the name of the village, we have to walk a relatively long way surrounded by beautiful natural beauties. Near the village, we run into a shepherd named Sheer Muhammad, sitting under an old leafless tree by a pond. His is the simplest of lifestyles. The Baluch mainly speak the Baluchi language, a branch of northwestern Iranian languages. Experts say the Baluch language is very similar to that of the Medes, a people of Indo-Iranian origin who inhabited the western and northwestern portion of present-day Iran. And that is a testimony to the deep roots of the Baluch tribe in Iran. Today, the Baluch people live in the southwest of Iran, the south of Pakistan, Afghanistan, Oman, India, the UAE, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Zanzibar. Borders between countries haven't been able to separate members of this ancient Iranian tribe. Although they live in different countries, the Baluch have preserved their traditions. They pay each other visits, and intertribal marriages are common. The Shahnameh and several other old books have placed the dwelling place of the Baluch people at around the north of modern-day Khorasan province. For various reasons, This peace-loving, serene tribe have had to move here, the southeast of Iran, and lived in peace since. Shir Muhammad Baluch is one of the original members of the old Sham village. But today, the village is nothing more than a collection of abandoned buildings where he can rest during sizzling hot days. This is amazing. They place one lantern and both families lived under the light of that one lantern. There isn't much left of the old Sham village, but even the ruins of it speak of the very rich culture of the kind, hospitable Baluch people. One of the structures that has stood the test of time is the beautiful mosque of Old Sham, built by the very hands of those who inhabited the village many years ago. It's gotten unbearably hot by now. I am kilometers away from the coast of the Sea of Oman in Baluchistan. But that distance is not going to keep me from a much-needed dive on the golden sand beach. The difference between the temperatures in Iran's climate zones is incredible, and to many, unbelievable. I'm in the southeasternmost part of Iran, swimming in the Sea of Oman in the middle of winter. On this same day, some of my mountaineer friends climbing up Mount Damavand tell me the temperature where they are is around minus 30 degrees. That's a difference of 60 degrees between two areas of Iran. I've done my swimming, and now I've decided to travel to the southeastern end of Iranian territory. That's the Gwadar Bay, located in the Gulf of Oman on the maritime border of Iran and Pakistan. A lot of fish is caught and brought to shore here. Many large trawler launches unload their catches on smaller boats on the shore. Before they arrive in Iranian territory, the fish coming from those launches are purchased by middlemen and transported to big cities around the country. The main purpose of my trip to Gwadar Bay is to see the beautiful Hara mangrove forest in this border area. Hara is a species of the Lantana genus. The seeds from the tree fall into the water, where wave action takes them to more stationary parts of the sea. The harrow seeds become fixed in the soil layers of the sea and grow. Harrow trees are saltwater plants that are often submerged at high tide. They are salt-tolerant trees and are adapted to life in harsh coastal conditions. They contain a complex salt filtration system and a complex root system to cope with saltwater immersion and wave action. They are adapted to the low oxygen conditions of waterlogged mud. We are now exactly at the mouth of Khore Bahu. This is the zero point that separates Iran from Pakistan. We are about to enter a very beautiful river. As a matter of fact, it's a khor or firth, it's not a river. And it continues a long way in that direction. Khore Bahu is in fact a bay area created by water from the Sea of Oman. This is the last spot before you actually arrive in the sea itself. Before the firth, there is the Bahu Kalat River that flows from Sarbaz Mountains to the Gulf of Oman. This is it. I can see the mountains of Pakistan vividly from here. Pakistan is located right on the other side of the Hara Forest. A lot of birds and fish live here in this firth, which, as I said, was created by salty waters from the Sea of Oman. It's a very beautiful area. The Hara forests spanning this area are indeed unique. The Hara tree grows to heights of 6 meters and has bright green leaves and twigs. It is a species of the mangrove tree that can grow in coastal, saline, or brackish water. They have a complex salt filtration system and complex root system to cope with saltwater immersion and wave action. The Hara excludes salt by having significantly impermeable roots, which are highly impregnated with suberin, acting as an ultrafiltration mechanism to exclude sodium salts from the rest of the plant. Hara trees grow in 8 protected areas in Iran and are fortunately looked after by both the authorities and people. The Hara forests in the south of Iran are a major habitat for migratory birds in the cold season and for reptiles, fish, and varieties of bivalves. Green or hooked turtles and venomous aquatic snakes are also indigenous to the forests. Bird life includes herons, flamingos, pelicans, and angler eagles. Another important feature of these forests is the appropriate and suitable seabed conditions for the ovulation of fish in the Persian Gulf. The locals say you are very likely to run into a school of dolphins passing Gwadar Bay on your way to see the Hara forests. But looks like I'm down on my luck today. There are still many villages in Baluchistan that have weathered the storm of time and preserved their traditional look. But the way to visit one of them is to seek guidance from a local guide. And that person is none other than my very own friend, Shir Muhammad. We have a long way ahead of us to the village we have decided to visit. To get there, we have to drive on a vast plain. There are no paved roads, not so much as a dirt track. The name of the village is Nilak. Baluchistan is a very dry province. It rains very little here. As a result, not very long ago, the people of Baluchistan would dig a catchment to accumulate what little rainwater that fell from the sky. Those catchments acted as their only water reservoirs. They called them hotags. The importance of drinking water is not lost on anyone nowadays. Aware of the shortage of this vital liquid, countries around the world have embarked on preserving and conserving drinking water in recent years. The best way to prevent water from going to waste in a country like Iran that's facing a severe water problem is changing the consumption pattern. Put it simply, every human being needs only 10 liters of water to wash their whole body. But most of us keep the water running while having a shower, and let something between 100 and 200 liters of precious drinking water go into the septic tank. Nowadays, most of us think that to keep our yards clean, we have to wash them with tap water every week. While in the past, although the problem of water was not as serious in Iran as it is now, and the population was not as big, people would clean their yards with sprinkles of water and a broom. And the purpose was to prevent dust from rising when sweeping. In the past, there weren't as many cars that needed to be washed with drinking water every few days. But today, millions of liters of water is consumed every year to wash the millions of vehicles across the country. I came to realize the importance of drinking water in recent years. On one of my trips to this same Baluchistan region, I ended up bathing with only 3 liters of water after going without a wash for a whole week. It was a time when the people here were grappling with a drought. That incident led me to understand the importance of drinking water in Iran. I now understand why we shouldn't let even a single drop of it go to waste. This is one of the oldest houses in this whole area. In this whole village. And Haji Khodabakhsh was in fact born in this same house. He's giving me a tour of the interior. The houses in the village of Nilag are beautiful and traditional. But there is one house in this village that is very old, very beautiful, and unique. In Baluchi language, this house is called a kud. It is dark in the house. There is no electricity, no running water, and not even a room. This is all there is to it. The owner says that all the members of the family, and there were 9 of them, used to live together in this house that is no more than one big lounge. But despite all the deprivations, the members of the family are as close as ever. The Baluch are a very kind, family-loving people. I feel an eerie feeling of calm among these pure souls. Baluch hospitality makes any stranger visiting these parts feel at home in their houses. You feel like you were born and raised in one of these houses and lived a good, simple life growing up with these genial and warm people. Most of the Baluch people who don't go fishing at sea are herders, and in this area, camels are the best livestock to keep. Camels have adapted very well to the environment and climate of Baluchistan. My journey is coming to an end. Shir Muhammad tells me about one of his friends. Mr. Shah Bakhsh is one of the main camel herders in the region. The old camel rider tells me about Baluch kindness towards all of the world's creatures. Kindness embedded in the culture of this people. The Baluch are a very kind and passionate people, traits that are evident in the words of Mr. Shah Bakhsh. When I ask him if he's ever tried camel meat, he says the Baluch normally do not eat camel. That's because camels are loved by these people, and so they don't have the heart to slaughter them, much less eat their meat. I have arrived at the end of my trip, a trip that taught me many valuable lessons about the Baluch people and Baluchistan. This is a province with a beautiful, unspoiled environment. A place where the sea meets the mountains and plains. The Baluch people, with their rich ancient culture, are a source of great pride for Iran. I, too, am proud of these honest, kind people. Proud of having such generous fellow countrymen and women. The Sea of Oman looks like a drop of water against the unfathomable hearts of these people. All I want for the people here is proper, stable jobs compatible with their culture and environment, created by competent and caring government officials. I hope for facilities and development to come to this part of my country without doing any damage to its ancient culture and pristine environment.
but perhaps Iran's internationally renowned mosques and ancient remnants of Isfahan and Shiraz are what attracts most visitors from far and wide, but I'm sure many nature-loving individuals have become interested in visiting Iran's southernmost region and the pristine natural wonders of Sistan and Baluchistan. And that's it for this week, everyone. Do join me again next time here on Aperture for another documentary. Goodbye for now.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Salam alaikum, brothers and sisters. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and here is Batul. Welcome to the program for a better life. In our previous sessions, we asked this question, that what is a better life? Then we came to the conclusion that a better life is when a person is happy. This happiness is not the material happiness, but it is the happiness of the soul. So how can I reach this happiness? The answer is when I become a better person. Therefore, to have a better life, I need to be a better person first. How can I become a better person? In the very first session, we said that the first step to become a better person is yaqda. Now, what is yaqda? Yaqda means to wake up. Wake up from my deep sleep of negligence. Wake up from ghafla. Now, what is it that makes me ghafil? What is it that makes me negligent? What is it that stops me from becoming a better person? Ayatollah Jawadi Amali explains it beautifully. In his book, he says, he talks about these two terms called aqul and fuzul. Now, what is it? Aqul is where one uses his aql and looks inside himself. Then he looks outside. Whereas fuzul is when someone does something extra. Insan-e-fuzul is someone who always looks outside himself. In Farsi also we have this term, brothers and sisters, fuzul. That is when someone gets nosy. We say, fuzuli nakun, don't be nosy, mind your own business. In Arabic, in the book of fiqh, we have a term called ahde fuzul, where I marry someone to someone else without their knowledge. Or let's say I sell someone's goods to someone else without their knowledge or without their permission. This deal is void if the people involved disagree. It's because this person did something extra. Now the question is, how does someone get fuzul? Someone gets fuzul when a person thinks that he is perfect. He has no flaws. He prays in time, he fasts, he went for Hajj, he gives khums and zakat. So, he is good. Then he starts looking into other people's flaws.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand there crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
He tries to look for the defects. He is always probing into other people's lives. He becomes a fuzul. For example, let's say I see some sister and I say, you know what? I went to Karbala with her. We shared a room. She does not wake up for Salatul Fajr. Or I say, you know what? That sister who wears perfect hijab at the center, but when I see her in Costco, she had no hijab. So what am I doing? I'm doing fuzuli right now. I'm looking into other people's lives. And when does this start? It starts when I think I am the best. I am a perfect Muslimah. I am the perfect Mumina. I am the perfect believer. That is why I need to mind my own business. Shaitan will make me feel good about myself. He will say, you are doing very good. My nafs will get proud. And then I start poking into other people's life. So it is always good to have badgumani, that is bad thinking about myself. Think that I am a sinner. And if I keep looking for my faults, then I will be away from many, many sins. I will be away from ghafla. I will not be negligent. Imam Ali alayhis salam tries to awaken us in his sermon 222 of Nahj al-Balagha. He says, "O man, what has emboldened you?" That means, what has given you the courage to commit sins? What has deceived you about your Allah? And what has made you satisfied with the destruction of yourself? Is there no cure for your ailment or no awakening from your sleep? Do you not have pity on yourself as you have on others? Generally, when you see anyone exposed to the heat of the sun, you cover him with shade. Or if you see anyone afflicted with grief that pains his body, you weep out of pity for him. Let me give you an example here, brothers and sisters. For example, when I see a paralyzed person who is bedridden, I cry over his plight. I feel sorry for him. But then I forget that this can happen to me too. Today I am healthy and I can walk and talk, but God forbid one day I can fall into the same situation like him. We have to remember that. Imam continues. He said, "What has then made you patient over your own disease? What has made you firm in your own afflictions? What has consoled you from weeping over yourself, although your life is the most precious of all lives to you? Why does not the fear of an ailment that may befall you in the night keep you wakeful, although you lie on the way to Allah's wrath due to your sins?" Sometimes, brothers and sisters, while looking for defects in others, we go so far that we forget that this person is a creation of Allah. For example, when I'm looking for a match for my son, I forget that Allah is the best of the creators. He's Ahsan al-Qaliqeen. I talk of the defects of the girl. I go like, "Oh no, she's too short, she's dark. Oh no, her nose is too big." Without thinking that I am looking for defects in Allah's creation. Whatever He created is beautiful. Who am I to look for defects which I think are defects? Imam Ali said, "Inna Rabbi wa habli qalban aqula wa lisanan sa'ula." My Lord has granted me a heart that is aqul and a tongue that is sa'ul. Qalbi aqul is a heart that thinks with wisdom, and lisan sa'ul is a tongue that questions a lot. It asks whatever it does not know. So brothers and sisters, let us pray to Allah that we are aqul and not fuzul, insha'Allah. Wa akhiru da'wahum an ilhamdu lillahi rabbil alameen.
Your mercy, your love is on a need. So I need, so I need, so I need, so I need. So
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com www.batoon.org/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up,